Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. The coin and stamp experts are back for another hour of calls from all of you collectors out there. Bob Scott and David Tripp join us this afternoon. So if you are enthusiastic about coins or stamps, you'll want to get your call in early. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us, of course, voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins and your calls and David and Bob and Ray and you, it's off to the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today, we welcome back stamp and coin experts to the program. Joining us this afternoon is Bob Scott, a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, a head of the stamp department at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. All that was back then. Now, he's currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. Also with us today is David Tripp. He is the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and The Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and a cartoonist to boot. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Bob Scott and David Tripp, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray, it's wonderful to hear your voice again, distant as it may be.
Well, you know, we haven't had a guest here in months. It's been very strange here in Studio A. How you doing, Bob?
It's so nice to be back on, and it's rather nice not to have to be wearing masks to be able to do this.
Yeah, you got
which,
that.
Which, of course, with a phone makes it rather difficult.
Yeah, well, you know, it is, there are advantages, and one of them is that no one has to wear a mask for this program, so that's good. Now, I imagine with everybody being locked in, that stamps and coins have made an enormous comeback. Am I wrong?
I think correct.
Yes and no. lower valued coins, absolutely. Anything from $2,500 and down. The market has been very, very buoyant. People are sitting home and watching online auctions and eager to bid. The upper tiers of the market, however, are a little bit soft because I think when you're shedding that much money to buy something, you really do want to have it in the hand and have a good look at it.
And that's probably wise, right?
In my opinion, yeah, you betcha. You betcha.
Say it's the same for stamps.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess with the online auctions, if you're really putting out some cash, there is, of course, that worry about counterfeits, right?
Oh my God. To one degree, because so many coins have been put in these third party holders or slabs as we call them, some of the onus has been taken off the problem of buying forgeries. On the other hand, you know, quite candidly, the number of forgeries flooding into this country, generally from China and places like that, are becoming increasingly sophisticated and difficult to detect. And the coin industry, and I don't know about stamps, but the coin industry has got real serious think tanks together, and they are working with the government to stop this because the influx, even modern silver and gold eagles that are basically bullion, are being made in, you know, computers can scan what they look like, and they make copy dies. They make the coin out of tungsten and then put this thin sheen of gold on it. Then they fake the slab that it goes into, and then they sell it online. And it is wicked. It is absolutely wicked.
But
so
gold is
always
heavy.
Be aware.
Gold is heavy, though. I mean,
yeah,
can't you tell by heavy, weight?
But it's by weight, but it's also by specific gravity, and that's why they use things like tungsten, because these are remarkably close.
I see.
You know, and that's the problem. Unless you can test something really, really carefully, it gets very, very difficult. And of course, you don't want to get the piece. Yes, tungsten or some of these other metals are in fact harder than gold, but do you want to take it out and take a knife to it and scratch it
and find out it's real?
Exactly.
Yeah, I got you.
Bingo.
It's the old lead bar of gold painted.
Yeah. David Tripp is here. Bob Scott is here. All right. I have a question for both of you individually, and then we'll take a break and then hit the phones. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Bob Scott, a stamp issue. You know, as a stamp collector as a little kid, I always was told, all right, you got to keep these in pristine condition. You don't mark them. You don't put your name on them. You don't cut them into little pieces. And then you have the world's most famous stamp being signed not once, but like eight or nine times. What is the deal with that? And doesn't that kill the value?
It absolutely does not. The British Guiana, the most valuable stamp in the world, there is a tradition that goes with it, and that is when you spend what has always been an enormous amount of money to get it, you also get the right to sign the back of it. And the great
teeny tiny letters, no doubt.
Yeah, how big is the stamp? I mean, 7-8 people signed the thing.
They honestly did, and it. A tradition that started in 1880 when Ferrari bought the stamp, and he had this habit of actually putting a little trefoil, a little purple three-leaved hand stamp on the back of all the great things that he owned. Mm. Now, for the most part, nobody has really added to that in any other philatelic item. But with a British Guiana, the next person who owned it in the 1920s, Arthur Hind, he put a hand stamp. Then his wife, who he'd fallen out with and divorced, and who got it through the divorce, she hand stamped on top of Arthur Hind's mark. And so there's a whole history. The back of the stamp is arguably more interesting than the front. There are still mysteries. As there's one mark that has not been identified. So at some point, as the techniques for photographing and illustrating improve, we get a better look at all these marks. And, of course, in recent history, John DuPont, who the infamous owner during the 1980-2010 period, he signed it with his initials in pencil, and then this was followed up by Mr. Stuart Weitzman, who bought the stamp, 6 years ago. He actually had a special signing ceremony at the Smithsonian. And as a famous shoe manufacturer and designer, he did a little line drawing of a stiletto and just added his initials to it. So no, with almost any other object in collectibles, putting marks on it is a detraction. For this one stamp, it's an addition.
Yeah, and with coins, if you put a mark on it, 9 times out of 10, you destroy the value, although back in the 16th century, the Este family actually countermarked their entire coin collection, and those now bring a premium. So it's what you got and how you do it.
All right. Question for you, David Tripp. We only have a minute here before the first break, but, you know, I drive home from work and I hear an ad on the radio, okay, the U.S. Silver Eagles, they closed the West Point facility due to the COVID, and now these are super rare. They're made in Philadelphia. I'm ready to fork out some cash, man. You better talk me off the ledge.
All right, you're off the ledge. First of all, you can't. There are about 200 of these thousand these coins made. They were made in April when they closed the West Point facility because of COVID. moved manufacturing to Philadelphia. There's no difference in the coins. They have no mint marks on them. So you cannot tell one from the other. The only reason that these have been appearing is that they are shipped to the wholesalers from the mint in what they call monster boxes of 500. And it's simply by seeing the inventory number on the sticker on the side of these boxes that they know they were made in Philadelphia as opposed to West Point. They're $27 each from West Point. And you're looking at, I've seen prices online of up to $1,400 for the so-called emergency issue. My sense is keep your money in your pocket.
Okay, you're recommending I don't fork out $1,400 then?
No, sir. Not. Let's put it this way.
I wouldn't even do it with your money.
All right, you know, I'm only $1,300 short. All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. David Tripp, Bob Scott are here. We'll get to your calls in a moment. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins today. Bob Scott will handle the stamps. David Tripp will handle the coins. And gentlemen, one email here and then I think just one. Let's see. Yes, just one and then we'll get to the phones. Yeah, I've lost it now. Oh, this is good. You know what? Adventures in semi-professional radio. Here we go. The subject heading, this is from Matt. Gold Indian head coin. Hello, back in 1961 when I was 10, I was given a 1914 Indian head $5 gold coin. It has been in a safe since then. It is not in mint condition, but has not been circulated very much. I think it's in pretty good shape. Would you have any idea what it might be worth today?
Sure. Well, it's going to depend on the date, as we've learned over the last 15 years we've been doing this.
Yeah.
But assuming it is not a rare date, and quite candidly, for that series, there are only a couple of them that really sort of ring the bell. 1929, and you're over $10,000.
Yikes. Why?
It's the last year.
Oh.
It's the last year they made them.
And
there were very few made and very few circulated. But the common ones are in fact common, and you would be looking in slightly worn condition at something in the neighborhood of $450 to $500.
Okay.
And once you get into the uncirculated grades, you can be looking at its condition, but in really super-duper mint condition, you'd probably be looking at up to a couple $1,000 for a common piece.
All right, and this is a 1914, he says. So that's
1914. Oh, no, 19. There we go. I'm not listening because I can't see you.
No.
But 1914, we are looking at, in uncirculated condition, $500.
Okay.
And in super-duper uncirculated condition, we're looking at, let's say, $2,500.
Okay, very good. David Tripp is here. Bob Scott is here. And let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Fred is first. Fred and where? Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
Hello, Fred.
Great. So, Bob, question for you. I'm not a stamp collector per se, but I recently bought some items from an estate, including about 60,000 postcards, which an elderly woman had been collecting all her life. So they go back, I think, to like pretty much the 30s on up to, I don't know, maybe the last 10 years. And this question about the value of stamps on postcards. I mean, maybe you have some general tips about collecting stamps on postcards and their value. And if there's any postcard stamps that are particularly valuable.
Well, the postcard really got its own value, I think, circa 1920, because it was just an open piece of mail, if you like. You know, anybody could read it. Of course, they had the benefit of being extremely light. Are these mostly national, as in local to the states, or are they international?
Yeah, I think they're a large percentage Massachusetts and a smaller percentage of like the other 49 states, and probably sizable number of foreign countries, and probably about, 20% of them have been you know, have stamps on them, have been mailed, and, you know, I'd say probably 10 or 20,000 have stamps on them, and the rest do not. So, you know, they're all over the place.
The first thing you have to know that the postcard is essentially the cheapest thing to mail. It is literally pennies. You will find that most of the stamps you've got are, you've probably got 0.5 cents, 1 cent, 2 cents, and 3 cents. And because they're the lowest denominations, they do tend to be the commonest. There are very, very few postcards that have stamps on that have any real value today. They didn't tend to use coil stamps, where you get rarities, especially in the early period around 1930. But the secret to postcards is actually the images on the front of them. If they show buildings, locations, they're going to be better than the, say, standard "wish you were here" postcard, if you see what I mean.
I have some old postcards with the old Philadelphia Mint when it first opened in 1901. Very cool.
Nice.
And but the reason that you love them is because of the depiction of the Mint. And it, great black and white photographs of buildings that have gone or are still extant just in their earlier days are collectible. And they're mostly collectible by historians, so they kind of drop out of the stamp, the philatelic world, and they drop into actual, there are societies and there are specialized dealers for just postcards. If you wanted to get a value for these, my advice is just Google a postcard dealer. There are one or two in Massachusetts. There are, and you'd probably be better off going to the local. I'll be honest with you, it's not going to be an awful lot of money, because you buy these things in large amounts and then you sell them over a huge period of time at, you know, $5 and $10 a throw.
Yeah.
But to be able to do that, you've got to be able to buy them for, you know, 50 cents to a couple of dollars a piece if you're buying them wholesale. But that would be my advice if you really want to find. It's kind of out of my purview.
Okay. Well,
but
Fred,
I know there are. And before going to a dealer, look up for a postcard collecting club.
Yeah.
Because if you can get in touch with somebody there, they will point you in the direction of the reputable dealers.
So there's not a book like the Red Book for
too many of them. There are books for the postcards that were created, the early postcards from the 1880s to about the turn of the century.
Yeah, there's a book on the postcards of Alphonse Mucha, for example, who was a great printmaker from Czechoslovakia.
Absolutely.
And specialty areas like that, you will find special books. But I don't think there's anything general, is there, Bob?
Nothing general, because it's too wide of a field. But the early ones are, really early ones, are fascinating, because you'll find a half dozen different types of the same postcard. You'll have colorized versions. The person that colorized them, you will find a series of postcards of completely different places with exactly the same sky, with the exact same clouds behind them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a brilliant subject.
All right, let's go to Woodstock now. And Joe, you're on with David Tripp and Bob Scott.
Hello.
Hey, Joe.
I'm curious. Yes. I'm curious about 2009 Lincoln commemorative pennies, the one with Capitol under construction for the reverse.
Okay.
I have the impression that somebody said that that was worth something.
Everything is worth something. The question is how much. I mean, it's the point is with all these things, as new things are being made, they're generally these days made in large quantities, and that is the one thing that you have to be fully aware of. And you know, some of these coins in mint condition are worth $10 a piece. And that's the problem. It's, you're not into the Mega Millions yet. And so it's one of those sort of issues that things aren't, it's just early days yet, and that's really the bottom line. So it's not something that you're going to be able to retire on in the immediate future.
Oh, right? I had no intention of that.
Oh, okay.
$10 is $10, though, right?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, and that's generally, though, if it is in a slab, and the slabbing process generally costs, sad to say, more than the coin itself is worth.
Right now.
Yeah. Well,
and then you end up into this sort of circular logic.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, and I say it's basically uncirculated. It's not. I've had it, and I have several of them. And someone in hello.
Hello.
Yes, we're here.
Yeah,
hello.
Somebody had said that it was worth about $2,500, which I am incredulous about.
Is that possible, David?
That is not a number I have ever seen associated with this. No. What I will do as we keep talking, I will double check this to make sure that I have not erred in any way on
right.
this. And so you said this one. What was the issue of this?
2009.
Yep.
The Lincoln commemoratives. Pennies.
There's a whole series of them. That's
there
the issue.
Four.
And
right.
there's a whole series. The record price for one, I have just found this. Now, this will be made from the Denver Mint, was sold in absolutely pristine condition, what they call MS-68, which is one step from perfection, for $4,900.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. And that is the Capitol building under construction.
You know, this is Philadelphia.
Oh, yours is Philadelphia. Well, then we go back to, you know, they do exist at $500 a piece, and I'm giving you the record prices.
Right.
Right, I understand.
You know, on the other hand, so yours is from, and it is, all right, so $2,600 is possible. Again, MS-68, near perfection. Two grades lower. MS-66, and you're looking at a whopping $15.
Okay.
So it is condition.
All right. Still, Joe, you don't throw it into a wishing well, right?
No, yeah. it's worth more than a penny. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough. Our number is 800-348-2551. Bob Scott is here at David Tripp at Stamps and Coins today. Mike in Clarksville. Mike, you're on.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
A collection of two different family members from the 40s through the late 70s of stamps. Some are in some books, a lot are loose. Where do I go? What do I do?
1940s, are they singles? Are they blocks? Are they sheets?
Most of them are singles. Some are stamped and used, and others were a collection. Oh, you know, of a young girl when she was young and
yes.
then through her life. Yeah.
And mostly used or unused?
There's a mix.
Okay, it's half and half. I will be honest with you because of the time period. The used versions are really, they have no value whatsoever. The unused, uh-huh. if the denominations are really all under... If they're all under 50 cents, they're actually just worth their postage value. Unless if you've got something 50 cents or above, the chances are there will be at least their postage value and probably a premium above that. But to give you an idea, postage from that period, especially 50s, 60s, and 70s, is generally changing hands at about... hate to say it, about 40% of its face value.
Hmm. Okay.
And the biggest calculation you have is adding up the value.
Right.
And it's you figure out that you're actually spending, you will spend more of your time in terms of value adding up the value, because if you've got 1,000 4-cent stamps, you've got $40.
Right.
40% of that is $16.
Yeah. Okay.
And then all of a sudden you spend...
Doesn't it make you feel good, Mike? Doesn't that make you feel happy?
It sounds to be, it's below minimum wage, Bob.
If you're really quick, you might get up to half minimum wage.
Mike said he's glad he didn't devote all this time. Hey, Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Sorry, You know, Bob will do that. He'll bring everybody down, and this is just the way it happens on the show. 800-348-2551. He's the good humor man. Let's go to Barbara in Ballston Spa. Barbara.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Barbara.
So I have a couple of coins that my mother-in-law inherited, and one is a $3 gold piece from 1874.
Okay.
And one is a silver dollar from 1885.
Okay.
And a 2 cent, I guess it's a regular copper from 1864.
Okay. Well, let's start with the $3. We're going to ask this common question that I always ask: what sort of condition? I mean, gold always looks nice and shiny, but does it appear to have any wear? Does it seem to have been in somebody's pocket, or does it look pretty much like
it? No, it's in pretty good condition. It was in a little plastic baggie for all these years.
$3 gold pieces are historically really kind of interesting as far as I'm concerned. They were only made for a short period of time, and they were incredibly unpopular with the populace. And when something is unpopular, the government doesn't make as many, and then they push them off. So they're interesting, even the most common ones, and 1874 happens to be one of the more common dates, I'm afraid. But in average worn condition, what we call extremely fine, it's still going to be worth $750.
Yikes.
So that's a nice base value. If it is approaching uncirculated, you can double that, and you're looking at about $1,400-$1,500. And then again, as we always say, if it's really super duper value quality, then you're looking at over $10,000. But that's if it's really looks like it was made yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, the 1885 silver dollar. I don't know if you have it in front of you.
I do.
You do. Okay. If you look on the back of the coin, and this will make a big difference to the value, if you look on the reverse of the coin, right beneath the tail feathers of the eagle, you may or may not see a little letter. It'll be either an S, an O, or a CC for Carson City. And if there's nothing there, it means it was made in Philadelphia.
Not West Point. Drum roll
here, please.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, no, nothing there.
Nothing there. Okay, it's Philadelphia. It's pretty common, and you're probably looking at something in the neighborhood of about $30 or $35.
Okay.
Okay, and then the next one was 2 cents, you said, from
1864.
Well, these are, again, there are varieties on these, and we're not going to really go into it. These are, you know, Civil War issues. They were made between 1864 and 1872, 1872. If it's heavily worn, it's going to be worth about $10. Mm-hmm. If it's average wear, it's going to be worth about $30. And again, if it's uncirculated, we're looking $70-$75.
Okay.
Nice. Okay, that's great.
All righty. Well, thank you. I mean, an interesting little collection there.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick break. Bob Scott is here. David Tripp is here. It's Stamps and Coins on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. Stamps and Coins today. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here. They were supposed to be on in November, and I think there was a hearing.
There was a hearing, yes. We were impeached.
Oh, that's what was going on. And then we bumped you, and then the COVID happened, and now we are here. And you guys
social distancing 300 miles away.
That's impressive, and the connection is very good. This email came in from Rich in Niskayuna. Rich says, I have an 1881 $10 Liberty head gold piece, no mint mark. Looks to be in great condition. How do I get it appraised and graded without joining NGS or PCGS, and what would an approximate cost for that be?
Well, first of all, we he said it's a gold piece, but he didn't tell us what the denomination is. Which
$10.
$10. I'm sorry. Obviously, my head is kicking out, even if the telephone
That's
is not.
That's fine, sir.
If we have a common date one, the thing to remember is that since COVID and everything else like that and the flush of money coming from the government and pumping everything up, the price of gold has absolutely taken off.
Yeah.
And when we were on the air the last time, gold was probably about $1,200, $1,300 an ounce. It's now approaching $1,800.
Wow.
So there has been a big push. A lot of collectors, we were talking about the market changing a bit. A lot of people have decided to put their money in gold under $2,500. And so it's pushed the premium levels up a lot, the difference between melt weight and purchase weight, yeah. purchase price. In any case, an average $10 gold piece, Liberty Head, right now you're looking about $850 for a common one in our usual average condition. Once you get into uncirculated for these coins, the prices really do start to bubble around a bit. And, $900 for basic uncirculated, and then it can go off the charts.
All right.
Now, the thing is, if you send it into one of the grading services, if you take it to a local dealer, most dealers are authorized to take things in and send them into NGC or PCGS. You can do it directly if you want, but you have to join the service, for which there is a cost, and then wrap it up and sign the paperwork, which can be a little bit entailed, especially if you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
So the suggestion would be to take it to a dealer. It's probably, the dealer will say, well, this is going to be worth X or Y. Sometimes it's not really worth it if you're just going to keep it. It's only worth it if you're going to sell it.
Right.
And it can cost, generally speaking, let's say $50 to $100. And some super duper, if it's a rare coin, they then charge a percentage. So it can get expensive from that point of view.
They charge a percentage just to do the same thing they would do for a cheap coin? That's a racket.
Yes. Well, those are your words, not mine.
Fine. Well, I mean, on what logic then would you base the fact that, okay, we're going to charge you a percentage for this?
Because their insurance values, it's the way they do business.
All right, well, then I take it back.
And believe me, they have, these places have PCGS and NGC, which are the two biggest.
Yeah.
The number of coins that they have slabbed in the last few years is just remarkable.
Okay.
We're talking tens of millions.
All right. All right. My legal department here at WAMC says retract the statement. I hereby retract that statement. This email came in from Jerry. Jerry says, I have an envelope that my father-in-law brought back with him from WW2 that have Hitler stamps on it. Do these have any value? And that's from Jerry.
The short answer is, why do I always get these questions? I mean, I'm up to $16 so far. Here's the story with the Hitler stamps. As soon as the world, first of all, the Nazi propaganda machine was incredibly adept at putting Hitler's face on every single stamp they issued, almost without exception. There are, of course, exceptions, but there are literally millions and millions and millions of Hitler stamps. And as soon as the war ended and the result was declared, the stamps suddenly became, let's say, somewhat politically incorrect to use. So what everybody did was they just put them away in their drawer. They wouldn't throw them away, but they just put them away. And over the last 75 years, they've just been coming out of those drawers.
Yeah.
And so they are so common, especially in unused. The news for this is people do collect it. It is part of German philately. And actual uses on cover are slightly better than the unused stamps, which are next to worthless. So it's a little bit, but unfortunately, it is still within the last 75 years. There were literally millions and millions and millions of pieces of mail, all with Hitler stamps on them. There are a few that have some overprints, but if they're basic Hitler stamps, there is really no sale value. Although people do, when I first started, people wouldn't even sell them. It was deemed virtually illegal to sell them.
But and at Sotheby's and Christie's, there were, and still are, as far as I know, there was a policy not to sell anything that had to do with Nazi memorabilia.
Mm, okay.
Exactly. Even though, because they had stamp departments for a long time, you couldn't avoid, if you sold a 20th century collection of Germany,
you couldn't avoid it, yeah.
Or any of the over, the rule was there, but nobody actually followed it.
All right, one more email here, and then we got to get to several phone calls here before we wrap up the program in the next 10 or 12 minutes. This one came in from Stephen. And Stephen writes, I have two paper bills, and I'm curious about their value. They're well-worn, an $8 from 1777 and a $2 from 1778.
Well, the odds are, based on what you've said, that these are going to be continental currency.
Colonial currency is what he says, yeah.
Yes, but the thing is, colonial currency, you do get colonial currency, which was state by state. So you can get them from Georgia and Pennsylvania and New York. The later date, it's generally continental currency. When they were, you know, it's early inflationary currency, there was nothing to back it up.
Right.
And so if they're very worn, and Bob is good at this too, but we're still under your $16 threshold, aren't we, Bob?
Very, very much so. Yeah, and it comes down to the same thing. Nobody throws money away.
Right.
And so even though they date back an enormous amount of time.
They are fascinating collectibles about that concern the founding of the nation, and you can find information on them online. Just type in continental currency. There used to be an old saying during the period, it's not worth a continental.
Ah, very interesting. All right, back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Ed in the Adirondacks. Ed, you're up.
Yes, I have a Civil War token coin that says Army, and it has a cannon on it. I was just wondering the value of it, and it's in pretty good condition. I dug it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Great. Oh, that's always fascinating because where you dug it up is as interesting as what you dug up. But Civil War tokens of this type are they are basically what we used to call patriotics, and they were made during the period. A lot of small companies made them. They passed as legal tender in many cases at the value of a cent because there was a shortage of coinage. But unless it's in really tip-top, and these are collected by variety, which gets very, very entailed, and, you know, is the cannon pointing a little bit up or a little bit down can make a difference. But as a rule of thumb, you're probably looking at about $10 or $15.
Hmm.
But still, they're fascinating pieces of history.
Yeah, for me, it's more of a conversational piece.
That's it.
And strangely enough, I found one in the crack of a rock along a river, and it was a Navy one with an anchor on it.
Oh, so you've got Army and Navy. That's great. So you've got both.
Yeah.
But you also have, you'll get them, there are varieties that have Abraham Lincoln on them. You'll get ones that have the White House on them. And then some of them actually have the name of store owners. Which we call store cards. And it's a fascinating series and opens up a whole different light on American commerce of the mid-19th century. They're fascinating things.
Well, Ed, thank you very much. Over to line 5 and Rich in Glenville. Rich, you're on.
Hi there. I have a 25-cent bill my grandmother gave me when I was a kid. And it's not in good shape. I think it would be rated as poor. But it says United States up at the top. And then, but then there's some sort of writing above it. I can't read it. I've kept it behind glass my whole life because it was so precious to her. And I thought it would be worth something.
And I think we're going back to the Civil War.
We are going back to the Civil War. This is what we call fractional currency. And again, as I mentioned earlier, there was a shortage of circulating coinage. And in fact, this is where it gets. This is where coins and stamps really do join forces,
yes.
Because people put stamps behind little pieces of mica originally, and use that as change. And then they started using paper to make small change. And these are going to be, and Bob, I mean, again, it's one of these condition issues, isn't it, where we're looking at great ones. It's going to depend on who signed it. Sometimes it's a man called Spinner who had this fabulous, very elaborate signature at the bottom, and those are interesting. But it's going to depend specifically on which issue it is. In pretty worn condition, as you've indicated, it's probably, again, under $20, Bob?
I'd say about $20, $25. And the truth is, I can't think of a 25-cent fractional that is super scarce, unless it's mint fresh.
Right, and then you're looking at $1,000, $1,200, something like that.
Yes, very much so. I mean, it was all part of the conservation of metal. They wouldn't make coins, would they?
Right, they'd rather make bullets.
Yes, exactly. And they used, in many, many cases, they used the same portraits as they used for the stamp production.
Right.
So they're sort of stamp banknotes.
Right. It's philonumismatics. Philomatics?
Philonumismatic.
Rich, yeah. You want to follow up?
Yeah, I wanted to get back to your Nazi stamp thing.
Go
ahead.
You
said Hitler stamps. I came across an album, and it's filled with Nazi stamps that are used, that they're, yeah. You know, they actually have postage stamps on them, but there are no
yes.
pictures of Hitler. They're just Nazi insignia on them. Yeah.
And
I have, like,
they basically, they will fall under the same category, although they're probably a little bit easier to sell, but it again comes down to Third Reich material, and it is all extremely common.
Okay.
Although probably slightly less abhorrent.
Rich, thank you very much. And now over to Latham and Cindy, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling. My father, over the years, saved thousands of stamps that are primarily international, primarily the larger currency, larger denominations, because it was all research papers and such being sent to him. And I didn't know, are there any particular countries or denominations or subjects that might be of more interest or more value, or should a lot of them just be put into the recycle for the paper that they have?
Give me a basic approximation of what time period these were used.
Primarily 70s, 80s, 90s.
Some
going back
to
the 40s.
In them, but pretty low value.
Okay.
It's a good way to get kids interested in the world.
Agreed. And
that's essentially it. The higher denominations are definitely scarce, but the 1970s is really just too fresh. Approximately how many letters do you have?
Actually, we just lost her, so we'll have to pick that one up on your next appearance. Patrick
indeed.
Patrick in Red Hook, you're on.
Yes, how are you doing?
Hi,
I
Patrick,
have a stamp that I don't...
Hello, Patrick.
Good. I have a stamp that I don't believe is the real thing, but it's a $2 inverted Jenny. U.S. postage. Did they reintroduce a stamp?
Yes. That's real, isn't it, Bob?
Right. That is absolutely 100% genuine. In 2018, to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the inverted Jenny, the post office actually put inverted Jennies out for sale in miniature sheets. Only the one trick was, in 500 sheets, they actually put the stamp out with one of the images the right way up.
Cool.
So an uninverted Jenny.
And a right-side-up Jenny is actually worth some money.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay.
The upside-down is the normal one.
All right, Patrick, thanks a lot. We only have a couple of minutes here, and we'll try to get to at least one or two more. We go to Oneonta, and Richard, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, my dad, he gave me a box of commemorative coins of Larry Bird, and they're unopened in like a foil pack. I think it comes with a card and a coin, and I got like maybe 12 minus 1. And my dad just said, here, take these and see what you can do.
Okay, this is going to be more out of my range. These are not really coins. These are going to be sports memorabilia collectibles.
And we do that from time to time, too, Richard. When we do the sports cards and comics show, I would suggest...
Yeah, I think that would be the best idea, yeah.
All right, let's go quickly now, very quickly, to Bill in Cambridge. Bill, you might be the last one here. Go ahead. You got to turn that radio down, Bill, all right? Oh, I don't...
I'm in my barn. Yeah, I have to move. Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, yeah, I have two jars full of wheat coins.
Ah.
Okay, well, the trick is to go through with your red book, which we've discussed, and look for the scarcer dates, 1909 S, VDB, 1914 D, 1922 with no mint mark, 1931 S. Those are sort of key coins, and it'll give you something to do in an afternoon when you're locked down.
Well, that's what I need to know about. That's what I was trying to figure the numbers, and some of the books were talking about 23, but I didn't know whether 09 was a time that I could...
1909 is the first year, and if there's an S, and on the back there, the engraver's initials, Victor David Brenner, VDB, and that's always been the coin that kids looked for. And look for 1955 with a sort of shaky look to it, the double die. Those are classic rarities. Everything else is going to be based on condition.
All right, Bill, that is where we will have to end the program. Bob Scott and David Tripp. Next time, assuming there is not an impeachment or a hearing or a COVID, you guys will come back to the studio, okay?
We're looking forward to it.
Great job, guys. Thanks a lot. Support comes from Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, featuring individual attention in a private environment with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette using Naturalique organic products, StudioKTM.com. Kent Hicks Construction Company. Featuring East Ranch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon, traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. At College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. collegestreetmotors.com. Well, once again, thanks to David Tripp and Bob Scott for being here. Thank you for listening. I apologize to those we left on the line. They'll be back. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your calls are answered by Jordan Yoxall. Our producer is Skunk Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, appropriately, Pets and Vets with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Right now, stand by for the book show.